Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
Former Representative Beto O'Rourke announced today he is running for president. Said Trump, "Wow, so either way, there's going to be a hot guy in the White House."
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to Stephanie Shrieff, the president of the political action committee Emily's List. She also answers a few more questions backstage at Studio AG. But first, a closer look.
The crowded 2020 field got another addition today when Beto O'Rourke jumped in and President Trump immediately attacked him. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Trump and his advisors are already putting together his 2020 re-election campaign, and they're not just staffing up and raising money. They reportedly want Trump's re-election bid to be one of the biggest and most sophisticated campaigns in history. Trump's campaign manager told the Washington Post this week, "We are creating the largest campaign operation in American history, an unstoppable apparatus that will follow and implement President Trump's strategy." An unstoppable apparatus? Are you talking about your presidential campaign or the Death Star? But of course, Trump has to create an unstoppable apparatus because he's perhaps the weakest candidate of any sitting president in recent history. Polls have shown that a large majority of Americans consider the president both a criminal and a liar. And yesterday, the guy who ran the president's last campaign, Paul Manafort, was both sentenced in one case and indicted in another. Trump was asked by reporters if he was considering a pardon for Manafort, and he insisted that he wasn't.
Will you pardon Paul Manafort?
I have not even given it a thought as of this moment. It's not something that's right now on my mind.
Now, in fairness, that's an accurate answer to virtually any question you could ask Donald Trump. Mr. President, for example, Mr. President, what is the role of government in American life? It's not something that's on my mind. Trump's brain is capable of holding exactly one thought at a time, and it echoes through his skull like a cave.
Hamburgers.
China.
Golf.
But the Russia investigation and the various scandals swirling around Trump aren't the only things making him vulnerable. In fact, this week he did something that could potentially hurt him more politically than Robert Mueller ever could. He proposed a budget that would gut wildly popular health care programs that he specifically promised he would never cut.
President Trump released his budget for 2020 today, proposing massive cuts to government-funded health care. The president's budget includes a cut of $845 billion to Medicare over the next 10 years and $241 billion from Medicaid.
So Trump said he would never cut Medicare or Medicaid, and now he's cutting billions from Medicare and Medicaid. Is there anything about this guy that isn't a lie? I'm starting to suspect his fake hair is covering a full head of real hair. Trump's legal attacks and his attacks on healthcare programs have made him one of the weakest incumbent presidents in modern polling and left a huge opening for Democrats, which is why so many of them are running for president. In the last few weeks, Washington Governor Jay Inslee and former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper have officially jumped in. Colorado Senator Michael Bennet was in New Hampshire. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio was in South Carolina. And Senator Elizabeth Warren was in Queens. And three more candidates were in Texas doing town halls on CNN. In total, the New York Times lists 15 candidates who've already declared and at least another 8 who might run. Look at that. There are so many people on that screen, you didn't even notice that one of them was Carrot Top. And on top of all that, the New York Times reported that former Vice President Joe Biden is 95% committed to running. And in a speech to firefighters this week, he teased a possible run.
You know, I'd like you all to, I appreciate the energy you showed when I got up here. Save it a little longer. I may need it in a few weeks. Be careful what you wish for.
No, dude, be careful what you wish for. You really want to do this? If you run for president, everyone's going to dig through every dumb thing you've said the last 40 years and get mad at you. Why do you want to do that to yourself? Right now, you're known as Obama's wingman, Uncle Joe, the only guy who ever looked like he was having fun at the State of the Union. And look at that party animal. He looks like right after that was over, he was going to make Obama do a keg stand. Then there's former Texas Senate candidate Beto O'Rourke, who officially jumped into the race today after spending weeks teasing a possible run. Beto appears on the new cover of Vanity Fair this week with the headline Beto's Choice. And look, I'm a little upset it took Beto this long to announce, because if he'd done it in 2008, I definitely could have played him on SNL. Definitely. I mean, it certainly was closer than John Kerry. But the cover was not the only eye-catching thing about this profile. Beto also explained why he wanted to run for president. Now, this is a key question for any candidate. People want to know why you're doing this and what you can bring to the table. It's a question past candidates have flubbed, and in many cases, it's doomed them. So here's what Beto said. I think I'd be good at it. I want to be in it. Man, I'm just born to be in it. I'm sorry, no one is born to be president. Nobody is born to be anything. Springsteen said he was born to run, and then he wrote 400 songs about New Jersey. I mean, look at Trump. He wasn't born to be president. If he was born to be anything, it was selling fake Rolexes in Times Square. Beto also talked about his rise to fame, the Senate campaign that launched him to national stardom, and the very first event he did in that campaign. And his description of that experience was, well, it was a little weird. He told Vanity Fair, I honestly don't know how much of it was me, but there is something abnormal, supernormal. I got in there, and I don't know if it's a speech or not, but it felt amazing because every word was pulled out of me, like by some greater force, which was just the people there. Everything that I said, I was like watching myself being like, how am I saying this stuff? Where is this coming from? Now, in the run-up to 2020, we here at Late Night, we're going to try really hard, and we're going to ask ourselves, would we make fun of Donald Trump if he said that? So let's see. Because every word was pulled out of me, like by some greater force, which was just the people there. Everything that I said, I was like watching myself being like, how am I saying this stuff? Where is it coming from? Yeah, no, Beto, that was weird. Yeah. That was weird thing to say. Seriously, I did not know that weed was legal in Texas. And when Beto went to Iowa today for his first official event since announcing his campaign, there were a few more weird moments. For example, at the end of his speech, a lady in the crowd forced him to make it absolutely clear that he was running for president.
Thank you. I cannot tell you how much this means to me. I will remember this forever. Every single one of your faces and what you were wearing and what you had to drink.
Let us remember it.
I'm running to serve you as president of the United States of America.
Man, I don't know who that lady is, but I love her. She should moderate every presidential debate. You have 5 seconds, now spit it out! And yet, as weird as Beto's launch has been so far, as always, Trump and his allies on Fox News have found a way to out-weird him. For example, the Vanity Fair profile mentioned some of the books Beto has in his house, and Fox News host Brian Kilmeade was apparently baffled by that.
Vanity Fair has a huge article and feature on him. It's almost as if they helped launch his campaign. Here's a quote from it. He says, I want to be in it, man. I'm just born to be in it. They also point out that he has this huge library, as if it's a big plus that he reads books.
I mean, it is a plus. Reading is definitely It's definitely a plus for a president. Also, just so you know, when you attack someone for reading books, you're really attacking yourself. Although I'm not surprised Kilmeade is anti-book. I bet if you open one in his house, there'd just be a hollowed-out spot for a Snickers. I see you found Moby Dick. I think you'll find it's delicious. Fox News is not the only cable channel that's taken a keen interest in Beto's announcement. There was also MSNBC, which honed in on even the smallest details of Beto's trip to Iowa. For example, they seemed especially fixated on his minivan.
Beto O'Rourke is driving himself in his Dodge Caravan. He just left
Keokuk. Where is he?
And he's arriving here to Fort Madison High School.
Vaughn, do we know how the minivan got to Iowa? If it's a rental that he acquired there, or if this is sort of the O'Rourke family minivan that has now been moved to Iowa for campaign purposes?
It looks like an Illinois van. This is about 3 hours away from any major city. The question, Congressman, is where is the rental car from?
Des Moines.
Des Moines.
Picked it up in the Des Moines airport.
Wow, hard-hitting stuff, you guys. Did you use Hertz or Avis? Answer the question. Will you release your minivan returns? Then there was Trump. Today, Trump is dealing with an urgent airline safety issue, a resolution from the House calling for the Mueller report to be made public, an unprecedented rebuke from the Senate over his national emergency declaration, and dozens of scandals and investigations of every aspect of his life. Not to mention, he was meeting with the Prime Minister of Ireland. But amid all of that, he just had to take a swipe at Beto.
Well, I think he's got a lot of hand movement. I've never seen so much hand movement. I said, is he crazy or is that just the way he acts?
I'm sorry, are you accusing someone else of having weird hand movements and acting crazy? Every time you do a press conference, you look like you're playing an invisible accordion. You guys ready for the liar's polka? Now, Beto is jumping into a crowded field that already has several established candidates who have spent weeks laying the groundwork in early primary states, like Bernie Sanders, who was in Iowa last week. And when he mentioned climate change, this happened.
Tonight, we say to Donald Trump and the fossil fuel industry. That is one way of phrasing it. I myself was going to say it a little bit differently. I am a senator, you know.
Man, you could just tell from his face that he wanted to say it. And it would make things a lot more entertaining if Bernie was just totally unleashed. Can you imagine how much bleeping they'd have to do on C-SPAN?
Donald Trump is a and a
Now, some of these candidates are more well-known than others, but one lesser-known candidate who seems to be gaining a lot of traction this week is Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. Buttigieg got rave reviews for his performance at a town hall on CNN on Sunday, where he said this about Vice President Mike Pence, who was previously the governor of Indiana.
How could he allow himself to become the cheerleader of the porn star presidency?
And that is such a great analogy, because this presidency is definitely like a porno, and Pence might be able to tell himself he's not the star, he's not the one having sex, he didn't take his clothes off, but he's definitely the guy watching through the keyhole. Democrats are eager to take on Trump because he's the weakest incumbent president in recent history. He's beset by scandals, and he's gutting Medicare. And on top of that, voters are looking at Trump and asking themselves,
is he crazy, or is that just the way he acts?
This has been a closer look. Our guest is the president of Emily's List, an organization dedicated to electing pro-choice Democratic women. Please welcome to the show Stephanie Shriok. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for having me.
So one of the things that I imagine you get asked all the time is you are a Stephanie. You run an organization called Emily's List. Who is Emily? Why is it that name?
It is. I get this question all the time, and the truth is, more often than not, I run into folks who ask us if we're Angie's List.
Gotcha.
And I would like to say this is a joke, but we actually do get calls sometimes at Emily's List about Angie's List. But the truth is, Emily is not a person. It's an acronym, and it stands for Early Money is Like Yeast. It helps make the dough, as in the money, rise.
Gotcha. And that is... And especially early money, that's referring to the fact that when candidates are getting into races, if you don't have money early on, it's very easy to sort of fall out of the running before you get started. You started this organization in 1985, yes?
Yes, our founders, Ellen Malcolm, mm-hmm. and a group of women got together because at the time, in 1985, and I do not mean 1885, right. a Democratic woman had not won a seat in the United States Senate in her own right at that time. And what was happening is that they would get ready to run, and the structures didn't think women could win because they couldn't raise the money. Well, of course, they couldn't raise the money because the power structures didn't think they could win. And so they were stuck. And Emily's List came together to be a funding mechanism to get those women up and running. Our first candidate, Barbara Mikulski, who then became the United States Senator from Maryland. And we've elected 26 since.
That's fantastic. I can imagine... The mood was not celebratory after the 2016 election at the Emily's List headquarters. What effect did Hillary's loss have on your organization? And did you find the energy level went up or did it fall down?
Yeah, and it's an understatement of how devastated we were at Emily's List. We've only ever elected zero, right? We
yeah,
haven't
right.
actually done that yet. And we've only ever supported one woman for president, and we supported her twice. And to see Hillary Clinton not win in 2016 was devastating. So I thought we were in big trouble. I was really worried women weren't going to want to run again. And then something magical has happened. And we have seen thousands and thousands. And as of today, I can tell you that 46,000 women have signed up at Emily's List, saying they want to run for office and take back their communities.
That is... And give us just a sense, you know, because obviously, you know, we talk about things like, obviously, the office of the presidency or Senate and the House. You know, what sort of... What are the breadth of offices that people are running for?
No, and it is from every aspect of society. They're running for city council, school board, county commissioners, you know, park departments have people that run for office. And so what we encourage women to do is go in, understand what's going on in the community, find your passion, and I swear there is an opportunity for you to run for office. Now, some are also running for the United States House of Representatives. And what we just saw were a lot of first-time candidates who are proudly called congresswomen today.
And when you get that call, what is the first wave of support that you provide to a potential candidate?
Yeah, and it varies. It varies. For the 46,000 women who have signed up wanting to run, I mean, we really just start with basics. Like, where do you go to figure out what offices are available to run for? I mean, some people don't know what they want to run for. We talk about how to find staff. How do you fundraise? If you've never fundraised before, and here's the truth. All these races take a little bit of money because you got to hire some help. You got to be able to communicate. So you got to ask for money. And we always say, you know, start close and start with your family. And if you can't ask them for money, this is going to be a hard go. But we'll practice and do all of that work with them. And we just keep going from there.
You support pro-choice women. And abortion is obviously a...
Yeah. Thank you.
As an issue has changed a lot in the last 30 years, but also seems to be... You're either on one side or the other. It seems like there's very little gray area for people. How have you talked to candidates about running on that issue or how to discuss it in elections, or do you tell them not to discuss it?
Yeah, and I will just want to note, we only support pro-choice Democratic women because we really believe that the Democratic Party has been the party that has provided opportunities for women. And it's also the party that is committed to choice as a value for women in this country. So we always start with this. Let's everybody remember that 7 out of 10 Americans believe that Roe v. Wade should be in place. They trust women to make decisions on their basic health care needs. And so you're starting from a position of power here. You're starting where the American people, the vast majority, I mean, how many times do 7 out of 10 Americans agree on anything?
Right.
They agree on this.
Yeah.
And this is really the truth. And what we're seeing right now and why it's gotten so loud and nasty, frankly, is that President Donald Trump has decided he doesn't have much else to talk about. Nobody likes his tax cuts. The Republican Party doesn't know how to talk about health care because they want to dismantle it. And so they're trying to drive that 30%. It's not even really that high. It's less than that. Those 3 out of 10, they're trying to get them motivated here. But I just remind our candidates, you know, first, speak from the heart. Talk about how important access for health care is. And trust women. Trust women to do the right thing, and you know what? They will.
So this is also... You know, you mentioned the fact that you've obviously, you know, the two times you've been involved in supporting a candidate for the presidency, it's been the same woman. It was twice. Now we're in this situation where, you know, we've obviously talked tonight about it's a wide field, but there are many qualified women candidates already in this race. Is this, do you find this a good problem to have for you guys insofar as you, I'm assuming, are not supporting one over the other at this point?
That's right, and we know most of them very, very well. I mean, and so we are, I mean, we would not call this a problem. It is not a good problem. It is a great opportunity for us.
Right.
And the truth is, for so many, I would say girls and boys, to see these strong women stepping up to run for president is really going to be a teaching moment for everybody across this country. And they're just phenomenal, every one of them. I mean, I watch Kamala Harris, who has served as a DA and Attorney General of California, and watching her step up and do this. I mean, we have actively been engaged with Kamala Harris, with Amy Klobuchar, with Kirsten Gillibrand here in New York. We've been engaged with Elizabeth Warren. I mean, we've been watching these women take every step along the way and just couldn't be happier about where this is going.
Well, it's certainly going to be exciting to watch. Thanks in advance for everything you're doing. And thank you so much for being here. Thank I really
you.
Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you so much.
Stephanie Shriok, everybody.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Stephanie Shriok from Emily's List.
Yes,
thank you so much for being here.
I'm thrilled. Thank you for having me. What an honor to be here tonight.
Well, we're so excited you're here, and it's a great time to have you during the 2020 campaign. You were just talking with Seth about all these qualified pro-choice Democratic women running. It's historic.
It is.
You talked about how you have a history with all these candidates running. You have a very specific history with Elizabeth Warren.
That is true. That is true. So if you sort of think about what was going on at the time when she was, when we got her, and literally got her to run for the United States Senate, she was putting together the Consumer Protection Bureau, which was brand new under the Obama administration, and she was going to be the director, except the Republicans in the Senate blocked her.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't going to happen. And so there's a group of us who were very angry about that and thought, what better way to get back to the Senate than to be one of them?
Yeah.
So we started having conversations, and then finally on one very hot summer day, I sat with her in her apartment and over what I remember being like a gallon of iced tea, answered every question she had about running. Because, I mean, this Elizabeth Warren, this extraordinary woman who's senator today and running for president, mm-hmm. she'd never run for office before for anything. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, she said yes after she took her grandchildren to Legoland.
That was what she had to do first.
She had
priorities.
She did. And I love that's exactly why we do the work we do at Emily's List, because these women, you know, they are so multifaceted, and they think of their families mm-hmm. and always are balancing that every day.
So someone like Elizabeth Warren at that point is a professor. She has written many books. But a lot of people who run for office are not that. They're new to the field. So what do you tell people who want to run for office but feel like you can only run for office if you know everything about everything?
Right. And this is one thing that we see all the time mm-hmm. with women. I mean, a lot of times we'll
not
have
with men.
To say, I hate to say this, but there's actually a lot of academic research mm-hmm. that shows that women have to be asked to run numerous times. And one of their hesitations is not knowing enough. Mm-hmm. And men don't really need to be asked at all when they step up
and
they
run.
Oh, I've got this.
I'm good.
And we've got one of those in the White House right now. Mm-hmm. And so it does. That is actually one of the differences. And one of the things that comes up is like, do I need a law degree? And we're like, no, we know we've got plenty. Thankfully, we've got women with law degrees there, but we need diversity of perspective. So what we try to do at Emily's List is we bring women in and we talk about, like, this is just putting a puzzle together. Like, this is, it's like a little startup, and we're going to just help you figure out, you know, what you care about, which, by the way, they already know, mm-hmm. how you tell your story, mm-hmm. how it relates to the people in your district, mm-hmm. and how you put the pieces together. And once they can see, okay, this is a manageable operation to build, mm-hmm. We get them to yes, and that's what we do.
And then how has your job at Emily's List kind of changed as the way people have campaigned have changed? Because I feel like people kind of had the same rule book over and over, and now I think voters are kind of bored of it. And so many candidates have had really successful campaigns by throwing out kind of like the right way to do it. But also there's a lot of, I'm sure, academic research that says kind of hitting the fundamentals also works. So how has the organization adapted to this new kind of era of campaigning?
So and we talk about that a lot, because the truth is, like, the fundamentals still matter, mm-hmm. and it does not matter who you are. Mm-hmm. You still have to have a story to tell. Yeah. You have to be relatable to your community. You have to understand the community. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to do that work. You're going to need some money. And maybe that money and how that's raised is different than it used to be, mm-hmm. depending on the candidate.
Sure.
But you need to have the financial resources. Mm-hmm. You need to have a message. You need to be able to communicate with voters. And you ultimately need to get 50% plus one of the vote. So so from that aspect, it's similar, and we're very good at that. Mm-hmm. But the changing dynamics, particularly as you relate to social media and how you are on all the time and what we put our candidates through and our elected officials through, I always just want to remind voters, like, this is a lot, and we should be very grateful
for
the women and men who decide to run.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, one of the mantras at Emily's list is there is nothing more courageous than running for office in our democracy. Right. And it is for the rest of us to have those brave women's back.
Totally.
Because you're out there all the time, and it's social media. It's, you go to the grocery store, somebody wants a picture with you, you're uh-huh. getting a video of you. It is empowering because you can reach so many more people, but it is also a challenge. Yeah. And we just have to balance that.
Seems like a really hard balance, and a balance that will always be kind of changing as campaigns change.
That's right.
Last question I want to ask you, 46,000 people contacted Emily's list to run for office after Hillary Clinton lost. Countless people in the years of the organization have run for office. This is really interesting to me. You ran for office when you were a student, and it seems like you could have used Emily's list to have your back there.
You've heard the story.
I've heard the
story. Yes. So I was one of those kids that wanted to be the president of my class. Like, mm-hmm. I just wanted to be class president. And I ran a number of times at Butte High School in Montana. There's my little history. And I kept losing over and over.
What was your
again.
Platform, by the way?
I, you know, honestly, I don't remember, which might be why
that's
I lost.
Right. What's the message?
Problem. What's the message? And what was my problem? So when I was a junior, I figured out a couple things. One, the whole school voted and not just my class.
Right.
Aha. So I expanded the electorate.
That's right.
Expand
That's
right. the electorate.
Yeah.
I campaigned only to the freshmen and sophomores and ignored my class, the juniors. My platform, message was to get so we could wear shorts.
Great.
Because we couldn't wear shorts back then. Uh-huh. I know, it was a long time. I'm aging myself now. Couldn't wear shorts. We did. We got it. And then as a final blow, I got this younger sister of one of my opponents to endorse my candidacy.
Wow.
Endorsements can still matter. So message, endorsements.
Wow. That is some incredible
politics. Expand the electorate. I think that's when I realized I might be a better campaign strategist than the actual candidate and elected official. But we did get shorts.
Good. Well,
when I won and became student body president.
What a victory. Well, look, I think it's worked out. I think there are a lot of women and men across the country who thank you for the work you've done. And good luck in the next few years, especially this year as this crazy, wild story unfolds.
Thank
it's really
you.
An exciting time.
Thank you so much. You know, we're just getting started. And you talk about those 46,000 women.
Yeah.
This is the next generations of leaders in this country. They're coming. They're coming fast.
Let me just ask this final question. If there is someone listening right now who wants to run for office and they want to reach out to Emily's list, what do they do?
Go to emilyslist.org right now. Sign up on the homepage. It's Run to Win, and we will get you into a program to get you started.
Perfect. Thank you so much for
being
here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night Podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.